Hey everyone, we've got a great interview for you today. Rob Sobers recently interviewed Microsoft's Troy Hunt. Troy is a prolific security researcher, blogger, and all-around interesting guy. Rob and Troy chat about the exploitability of public Wi-Fi networks, cookie hijacking, the future of HTTPS everywhere, the pineapple device, and man-in-the-middle attacks. Enjoy.
So there are a couple topics I want to hit on, but the first one, since I think it's kind of your forte, is the Wi-Fi security topic. So starting from the beginning, I guess from a home user's perspective, so just a layman that's using their computer at Starbucks or using it on guest Wi-Fi networks at airports and such, what's the main issue? What's the risk that they're posing by connecting to these networks?
Look, I mean, the real issue is not even so much Wi-Fi itself, but it's not knowing who is managing your traffic upstream of that access point that you're connecting to. So if we take the cafe example, you walk into the cafe, you connect to Wi-Fi, and let's not even bother talking about the encryption of the Wi-Fi network just for a moment, but you connect to that Wi-Fi connection. Now, you don't know what that cafe is doing with your traffic. It's just dead easy for them to capture every single unencrypted packet and inspect that later on. And likewise, it's dead easy for them to manipulate every single unencrypted request as well. So classic example is you could be loading LinkedIn, and you're loading the LinkedIn login page, which is still served over HTTP, and the cafe puts a little keylogger in there and captures your credentials as you enter them into the login page. So that would be a very sort of atypical example. And there are precedents of this happening. There's a very well-renowned precedent of the Tunisian government doing this to Facebook a few years ago in order to capture their citizens' Facebook credentials. So what happens upstream of the connection and the trustworthiness of the connection is one thing. The other thing, of course, is the encryption on the network itself. And what we often find is that places that offer free Wi-Fi have no Wi-Fi encryption per se. So either there's no encryption on the network whatsoever, so you walk in and connect and you're good to go, or there's no encryption on the Wi-Fi and the only sort of authentication or verification process is then done at a proxy level. So the Wi-Fi itself is still not encrypted. But, you know, sometimes you connect to a network and then you get a little web page pop up and says, okay, now I need you to accept our terms and conditions.
Yeah.
That's not Wi-Fi encryption. And a really good precedent of where that's been exploited, there was a tool a few years ago called FireSheep, which you may be familiar with. But effectively, yeah, that was looking at unencrypted traffic on Wi-Fi networks and going, hey, these guys have got, say, a Facebook authentication token in a cookie and it's not protected. We'll just steal that and impersonate the person.
Right. Yeah, that was actually the first time that I really understood the risks of sending traffic over Wi-Fi in the clear. Yeah. And the biggest thing that FireSheep taught me was that even if the login page was served over HTTPS and they couldn't capture my credentials, if the website wasn't using HTTPS for subsequent pages after I'm logged in, my cookie is now capturable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, this is now starting to get into the semantics of HTTPS. And I think what we see happening a lot is we see insufficient implementation. So I mentioned LinkedIn before. Perfect example. So LinkedIn, the login page posts to HTTPS, but at least as of a week ago when I last wrote about it, it was loading over HTTP. And inevitably people look at it and go, okay, but when your credentials post, they're encrypted. But what they don't factor in is when that login page loads, it's not encrypted, therefore can be manipulated, therefore can have keyloggers injected into it and things like that. So that to me is one of the semantics of HTTPS. The authentication tokens is another one, and then inevitably that's persisted by cookies, so our cookies flagged as secure. And I think what's happening is we're in a bit of this sort of transitional phase where we've got half our stuff hanging out there as HTTP, half it hanging out of HTTPS. We're trying to transition between the two and do it securely. It's still persist state. And I think we're sort of getting to the point now where we're going to start seeing a lot more HTTPS only. And we're already seeing it in things like Facebook and Gmail. But I reckon give it a few years and it's going to be a bit of an exception to see this in and out of secure, insecure kind of modes.
Right. And do you think what's stopping a lot of people from doing that right now is they're just afraid it's going to be slower because of the handshake?
Well, it's interesting. So I think there's a few old wives' tales and there are a few valid concerns. And the speed, to be honest, I think is one of those old wives' tale things.
Yeah.
And look, there are probably three different aspects to the speed. So number one, what's happening on the server side. And Google was very forthcoming when they went HTTPS only on Gmail and said, look, we're seeing between 1% and 2% CPU overhead. Now that, you know, okay, so you might need to factor that in, but let's face it, that's pretty negligible. The other side of things is obviously the client side. So is there a performance hit on the client side simply because it is having to encrypt and decrypt? And inevitably, yes, but I think that is also extremely small. So then we're left with the network. And yes, there's a bit more network communication, there's a bit more handshaking and authenticating going on. But again, it's very, very small. And I think, to be honest, the only example very recently I've seen where anyone has actually raised it as a valid concern is Joel Spolsky mentioned something a couple of days ago in relation to Stack Overflow. And he sort of said, look, we're moving to HTTPS, but we're giving people the option at the moment because there's a performance hit.
Yeah.
And it has struck me as a little bit interesting simply because Stack Overflow have been so focused on optimizing down to the millisecond that, you know, yeah, those guys, I can understand, are going to be a bit conscious of it. But I think for everyone else, you know, if you're going to add hypothetically 50 milliseconds to, you know, the initial handshake for, you know, to establish the authenticity of the certificate and so on, you're not going to miss that 50 milliseconds.
Yeah, I totally agree. I saw Joel tweet that the other day too, and I kind of raised an eyebrow because Stack Overflow is just so fast compared to a lot of other sites that it's almost it would be worth it for the extra security.
You know, to your point about the barriers, Nick Craver from Stack Overflow wrote a very good post in April this year where he talked about the barriers that they're facing. And there are a couple of really valid ones. And one of the really valid ones, particularly for a site like Stack Overflow, is the impact on search engine optimization. Because effectively what they're saying is that if we go HTTPS only and you request a resource over HTTP, we're probably going to have to give you an HTTP permanent redirect to another location. So the browser is going to give a response for the header that says, this isn't what you're looking for, go there. Now, what's that going to do to their SEO? They don't really know. And when you live and breathe on SEO, that's a fairly valid concern. So I'm really interested to see how it pans out for those guys and see how valid the concern is. The other one that comes up a lot is that AdSense doesn't support HTTPS. And I'm sure that any day I'm going to say that and someone says, oh, I've just announced they're going to do it because it just seems ridiculous for a Google ad network to not support it. But if your ad network doesn't support HTTPS, you know, you can't use it. You can't be throwing mixed content warnings and you also can't cut off your revenue stream, right? So that is a real hard argument to make.
Yeah. So for people that work in IT for big enterprises, and they have like a mobile workforce using various devices. They're using iOS, they're using Android. They're connecting from hotels and airports and wherever because the workforce is essentially mobile and there's thousands of them out there, thousands of employees. And you're an IT team. What should your number one concern be? Should it be that since we can't trust any of the Wi-Fi networks, we can't trust the connection will be secure. Should we require a VPN for everything? Should we ensure that they're not using external web services that, like LinkedIn, that could potentially be, you know, not doing things exactly right? What should they be worried about?
Well, you know, I think there's a couple of different issues here, and it's an interesting discussion I've had recently. So one of them is, are you accessing resources over a VPN already or not? So, for example, if you're accessing corporate resources, can you only access them via connecting to a VPN to begin with? Now, if you can, and this was effectively the discussion I had the other day, then you can effectively assume that the device is now part of the internal net. So the discussion then becomes, okay, well, what's the security position over internal net? At least it solves the problem of people eavesdropping on the wire. But I think the other angle to this, which is kind of interesting, is even if you are on the internal net, what role does HTTPS have to play? So, for example, you really shouldn't be sending any credentials across the clear on an internal corporate network. You know, you need to work on the assumption that that environment is already compromised. So in terms of the corporate environment, there's two things. Are you on a VPN? And then even if you are, does that negate the need to HTTPS or does it just mean that your threats are now internal and you should still have it? Personally, I think it's the latter. Of course, the other thing is if you're hitting external resources, then what's the transport layer position? So, you know, would you be confident hitting, say, Gmail over a public Wi-Fi connection? I think we can be pretty confident Google's got their HTTPS right, and they do things like cert pinning as well to make things even better. But would you be happy using Stack Overflow as it stands at the moment? Well, you know, there's a risk there because those auth cookies are flying around the clear. So, you know, then you sort of get into the realm of VPN services, the likes of Cloak or something like that that can run on the device. And if you're worried about it, then yeah, you need something like that because effectively you can't trust the service that you're connecting to.
Right. So going back to web security and web development, aside from using HTTPS, you know, one of the other major vulnerabilities or exploits, I guess, is probably a better term for it, is cross-site scripting.
Yeah.
So in a nutshell, what is the state of cross-site scripting? Do you see, is it still a massive problem? Because when I first learned about it and saw what you could really do with it, it really kind of frightened me. Has it gotten better since 2011 or so when I was actually working in web security?
Yeah, it depends on which way you look at it because, I guess, first of all, cross-site scripting and SQL injection remain at number one and two risks in, you know, everything from OWASP top 10 to various, you know, sort of, there's White Hat Security put out a lot of reports as well on the prevalence of risks, and those two are just always at the top. In terms of has it got better, I think it's gotten different. So it's gotten different in regards to, if I think back and maybe just a little bit more than 10 years ago and to things like classic ASP, you know, the situation we had there was that we had no output encoding. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people were just emitting untrusted data straight to the output and whatever's in there is going to be rendered to HTML source and that's it. At least today we have frameworks where output encoding is happening implicitly. So I think that has improved it, yet here we are in the same situation where we've still got this great prevalence. And I wonder if part of it as well is that we're seeing more stuff get exploited on the JavaScript side and it's an output encoding context problem. You know, so we're seeing people sort of go, okay, look, I'm going to use a framework where it's going to maybe output encode for the HTML context, but then am I going to use that same context in JavaScript and effectively, you know, have a great big hole. Of course, the other one that's happening a lot now is we're getting things like web services and we're getting risks within JSON output encoding. So we're sort of moving beyond just that one markup language that was pervasive everywhere.
Yeah, definitely. And I know Rails as a web framework has had its sort of history with various vulnerabilities that are quite nasty. And when they hit, it's kind of like a giant panic.
Exactly, and I mean, they've had issues like the mass assignment issue that popped up in GitHub a while ago too. So, you know, I guess all of these frameworks have sort of had their moments of fame, if you like, or if they haven't, they're about to.
Yeah, definitely. Going back to Wi-Fi for a minute, what is this pineapple device that you've been writing about?
Yeah, the pineapple. It's a very interesting little piece of equipment, and you know, my interest is not so much in breaking people's Wi-Fis, but it's to show the ease of it and therefore why transport layer security is so important. So the pineapple basically does two different things. So one is that it can act as just a normal Wi-Fi access point. So you can, for example, I take it to conferences and I set the SSID as free Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
And people see that and they go, oh, free Wi-Fi, that'd be nice. And they'll just connect to it as a normal access point. So you stand it up and you give it an attractive name like free Wi-Fi, and there is an alarming number of people that will just go, okay, great, free Wi-Fi, we'll just jump onto it. The other side of it is, and this is one that really surprises people, is that your devices actually send what's referred to as probe requests. Your device is actually sending these requests accompanying your MAC address, so you can sort of tie the request back to one device and inevitably disclosing where you've been. Now, the thing the pineapple does is it looks at those probe requests and then it turns them around and says, okay, I can see a probe for Rob's home network. I'm going to change my SSID to Rob's home network. The interesting thing then is that if your network didn't have any encryptions, the association gets made and the device is automatically connected. So I used this at a conference a couple of weeks ago, just before a talk, so I could sort of demonstrate the risk. And I had, I think I had about 75 different devices, you know, could have just been sitting in people's pockets, actually connect through and make the association. So, of course, once that association is made, any of the traffic that goes through is interceptable by the pineapple, and then it can be manipulated or stored or whatever it may be. So that's the pineapple. Yeah. It's a scary little thing.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed today's interview. A special thanks to Troy for taking the time to chat with us. For more interviews like this one, as well as other free content for IT security and operations pros, visit and subscribe to blog.veronis.com. See you next time.